Hello, and welcome to the TGS first quarter conference call. My name is Hank Hamilton, and I'm the CEO of TGS. Joining me today are Arna Hellen, our CFO, Robert Hobbs, our Chief Operating Officer, and Karen Elsewill, our Vice President of Business Development. Earlier today, we posted our first quarter earnings release, along with a recorded presentation of the results. We trust you've had an opportunity to review those, and we'll start off the call now with just a very brief summary of the main points, and then we'll open up the call to your questions. Our net revenues in Q1 were $70.8 million, which was 33% less than a year ago. The primary reason for that is that our late sales of $41.5 million were down 47% compared to a year ago, and they were actually weak in all geographic regions as our oil company customers basically froze their spending early in the year due to rapidly declining oil prices and an uncertain outlook. Our pre-funding revenues, however, were strong. They were up 17% compared to a year ago, and they covered 54% of our multi-client investments. Looking at our multi-client revenues, 87% of those came from projects that were still in progress, and only 3% came from surveys that were fully amortized. This was a highly unusual sales mix for us, and the effect of that was a multi-client amortization rate of 51% for the quarter, which is well above what we expect as our range of our expected range for the full year. This impacted margins, and our resulting operating profit was $19.8 million, which is 28% of net revenues, and that's down 58% compared to Q1 last year. Our earnings per share were 13 cents versus 28 cents a year ago. Our cash flow was good. Cash flow from operations after taxes but before investments was $95.9 million. Compared to $151.6 million a year ago. Our backlog at the end of Q1 was $132 million, which was up 8% compared to a year ago, but was a drop for the second consecutive quarter as the oil company spending weakened in the low oil price environment. Okay, if we turn to look forward now, we clearly communicate that we're in a very flexible position, both operationally and financially. Most of our fixed vessel charters are expiring later this year. We have lots of options to renew, cancel, or look for even better alternatives. Our cash position is extremely strong, and earlier this week we retired our one bond loan, leaving us with no remaining interest-bearing debt. We have seen over the past couple of months that our sales activity has increased markedly, and the pipeline of large sales opportunities is steadily growing. Last week's announcement of the block awards in Norway's 20th licensing round will have a positive impact on us in the very near term. We will continue to depend on late sales for most of our revenues, as we always have, and those late sales are by nature lumpy. Magnitude and the timing of those sales are very difficult to forecast. Looking at the full year of 2009, we're maintaining our expectations with multi-client investments of between $230 and $270 million, average pre-funding between 45 and 55% of those investments, an average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 35 to 45%, net revenues, and net revenues in the range of $470 to $530 million. Of those revenues, proprietary contract revenues will make up between 5 and 10%. This 2009 revenue forecast is roughly 10 to 20% lower than what we achieved in 2008. And we have, in line with that forecast, implemented a plan to reduce operating expenses beginning now in the second quarter. We don't believe that this will impact our ability at all for our capacity to generate revenues. It was focused on really overhead issues. We will continue to evaluate opportunities to increase our multi-client investment and grow our market share during the course of this year based on client support and on other economic indicators. Okay, at this time we'll be glad to take your questions, so if you could press star followed by one to pose your question, please.
Yeah, so first, James Redfern, Bank of America, go ahead, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, James Redfern here. Can I please just ask you to elaborate on the cost-cutting initiatives that you're implementing? If you just please talk in a bit more detail about that, please.
Yeah, I think we're our major expenditure when you look at our cash outlay is our multi-client investments. That dwarfs everything else we spend on. We're going to spend roughly $250 million on multi-client investments, most of which is on external vessels. So all of our other operating all compared to that. If we look at our next largest operating expense, it's our personnel and related costs. So we have implemented a small reduction in force, and we've also reduced the amount of contract labor that we're using. We're tightening our belt on things like travel, on things like marketing expenses, on issues that we don't believe have an impact on our ability to generate revenue. So in total, on an annualized basis, we're probably looking at about something on the order of $10 million or so.
Right, okay, great. Thank you. And just one more quick question. Can you please just talk briefly about the outlook for the Gulf of Mexico?
I think what we're seeing is that the activity in the Gulf of Mexico right now is focused on deep water. The shelf is slow. This has a little bit to do with oil and gas mix. As you know, the natural gas prices have not kept pace with oil prices. There's been a severe decoupling there based on supply and demand of gas in North America. And I think we're looking at the greatest activity in the Gulf of Mexico coming in deep water and coming from the larger players who are not limited by liquidity issues.
Okay, great.
Next, Jon Olaisen, Carnegie, go ahead, please.
A couple of questions. First, about a month ago, you issued a profit warning on Q1, and at the time you said that January and February had been very weak, but that March had seen activity being picked up significantly. And in today's quarterly report, you write that you've seen increased sales activity in recent weeks. Does that mean that the improvements we saw in March have accelerated and become stronger in April?
I think, John, we feel better today than we did 1 month ago for a number of reasons. First of all, is that the round in Norway is finally announced, which removes a lot of uncertainty, and we'll realize some significant revenues off that. Second of all, we've seen the oil prices stabilize now at $50 to $55, and they've been that way for more than a month, which creates a better atmosphere. We're hearing bits of news about slight improvements in economic indicators, and we are dealing with a number of large sales leads that weren't even on the radar screen when we had the call a month ago. So for all those reasons, I think we're more encouraged now than we were then.
Yeah, and a good surprise today is today the oil price is almost 60. Look, is it possible to say how much revenue do we expect from uplift to the 20th license round in Norway?
I think you can think about it in the same way that we think about what we call a large scale deal, which normally means in the range of $10 million plus or minus.
Yep. My final question is related to one of your comments in the quarterly report. You said that you are positioned to take advantage of opportunities. The best opportunities you had in the last downturn was buying multi-client libraries from competitors. Have you seen any of this happening in the market now, other than trends that some of your competitors with a bit more financial, what should I say, less flexible on the financial side, a bit stretched access to them? Are any multi-client libraries out for sale?
Right. You know, the opportunities that we think of along those lines are, you know, good opportunities to take advantage of perhaps low-cost vessels to add high-quality new data to our library. As you mentioned, buying library assets is something that we're also looking at. We don't have anything that we're ready to talk about yet, but we are pursuing some leads there. And then looking at perhaps M&A opportunities on maybe smaller companies that do have library assets as well. So all of those things are in the mix right now.
Thank you very much.
Next, Paul Dahl, Spurs Securities. Go ahead, please.
I want to actually follow up in some of the same lines as John here. How do you see TGS develop during the next 3 to 5 years? And could you, you know, explain some more how big market share you think it's possible to gain? And how do you feel oil companies' willingness to support new investments are currently?
Well, you know, I'll start with the last part of your question first. You saw by virtue of our backlog dropping in Q1 that we weren't able to secure, at least in the first quarter, a lot of new pre-commitments to new projects. We do sense that starting to change now, along with the late sales. I think the larger oil companies do have money budgeted. They do want seismic, and it's a question of striking the right area and the right deal. So I think that climate is improving. In terms of what's possible in market share, you know, we can go back and look at what happened in the last cycle. And I think, you know, TGS went into that down cycle probably with a 3 or 4% market share, and we're significantly larger than that today because of actions we took during that downturn. So I think that gives you an idea of the magnitude. It's difficult to say what will happen in this downturn because we don't know how deep it will be, how long it will last, and what our competitors will do. So all those things are variable. But I certainly would hope that we can make a significant jump.
So should we think that you're accruing a lot of cash even in this challenging market? Should we expect you to try to invest most of it and actually grow your investments also the next couple of years?
That's what we would like to do if the opportunities are quality enough. If they're not, then we're not going to sit with excess cash forever. We'll return to the shareholders.
And final question, Hank. How do you see TGS develop in the next 3 to 5 years? Will you strengthen your well-log basis, become a more integrated data supplier, or could you elaborate some on that, please?
Right. We are looking to grow our library, not only in terms of the amount of seismic and the amount of well-logs that we have, but also through other data types that are complementary. In fact, we recently announced an initiative to start distributing production history data from oil wells along with our well log data. So that's one example where we're branching out into new data types. And so we will continue to look for those opportunities and see if we can provide a broader geoscientific data offering.
Very exciting. Good luck.
Thank you.
Next, Morten Wieström, Family Funds. Go ahead, please.
Yes, it's actually Morten Wieström from Family Funds, but good afternoon, Hank and Doug. Just have a question, because I'm a little bit confused here, because your peer with the GECO, which reported a couple of weeks ago, I would say drew a quite different view on the multi-client market compared to what you are seeing now. Could you elaborate a little bit more like on specific projects in terms of you said something in the start that the E&P companies had frozen spendings in the first couple of months of the year. I expect that you have seen a significant uptick over the last, let's say, months. You said could you be a little bit more specific in terms of projects and also regions where you see a significant activity uptick? Thank you.
Yep. I would say Deepwater Gulf of Mexico is clearly an area where we're seeing high interest. I would say Brazil is an area where we're seeing high levels of interest. I would say that Norway was completely frozen because everybody was waiting on the results of this round before they decided what their next steps were going to be. So now all of a sudden we have a lot of activity around that. So those are at least three areas where we're seeing pretty strong activity. Also, we're seeing, I think, a lot of activity along the west coast of Africa related to some pretty exciting new discoveries that have been made in that trend.
Thank you. And also a follow-up question, that's basically in terms of your guidance. You're reiterating your guidance now for the full year 2009 in terms of top line 470 to 530, which of course, how confident are you in terms of reaching that guidance? Because you need, as you probably have calculated, a significant uptick in especially late sales for the remaining three quarters. I think you need more or less the same level of late sales for the last three quarters in 2009 that you had in the last three quarters in 2008, which was actually very, very strong quarters.
Yeah, I think you're right. We've done the numbers, and we do expect the late sales to pick up based on oil companies freeing up some of that money that's been frozen for the last three, 4 months. We also think that the specific offerings that we're coming out with. In other words, as we complete the White Azimuth survey, we have some exciting stuff planned for Norway this summer. So it has to do with the specific projects that we believe there is very high interest in.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Thanks.
Next, David Phillips, HSBC. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I've got a few questions, actually. First one, could you update us what your, I know you're only part of the overall deal here, but the plans for any potential second stage with the Freedom, what has most work in the Gulf of Mexico. Secondly, can you talk a bit about, it's a very broad framework of ideas, I apologize for, but, can you talk a bit about how the your exploration plans are developing some of your smaller E&P clients, thinking of the smaller E&P players. When you're talking to them about looking for the rest of this year, are you still getting a feeling there's a lot of sense of cancellation of exploration work, or is there really a feeling of postponement and a hope that the horizon is going to bring better conditions? And finally, just carrying on a theme, which I think the other guys have discussed here, looking to the past, to the end of this year and into the next couple of years, I guess the last time, moving to the upside, one question of the industry, I suppose, was, should companies own more vessels or more certain types of vessels to handle complex azimuth work and the growth there? I mean, do you see any sort of comparable trends there? I mean, I know you mentioned, expanding your library to cover other types of seismic and related data, but is there a particular technology or area that you think, is going to be a big question mark and could be a sort of a decider in the next few years, whether it's OBC, whether it's having more high-end data crunching and that sort of thing.
Right. Okay, back to your first question, which was related to our Freedom project. We have said several occasions that we hope to expand that project once it's complete, and we're still of that mind. We see possibilities for significant extensions there. We're working hard on that and want to expand our White Azimuth footprints in that geographic region, but we don't have anything ready to announce yet. The second question, I believe, was related to what's going on with the small operators, whether they have canceled everything or just postponed. And I think it's a mixed bag. I think there are some that that are severely limited by liquidity and are just unable to move forward right now. I think the well-capitalized companies are thinking a little bit like TGS is thinking. They're thinking this is an opportunity to gain a competitive advantage. And so I think some of those are going to increase spending in some areas, you know, on a strategic basis. And your final question, I think, was about specific technologies that we might be utilizing or investing in or that would be important for the future. I think wide azimuth is a very important technology that's been rapidly adopted by our industry. We want to use it, but we want to use it very intelligently, and I don't think that's by blanketing the world. I think there are areas where it provides clearly a better image, and that's where we want to try and focus its use. We are continuing to invest heavily in, I think, what you refer to as number crunching, which is the seismic processing algorithms. We see that the cycles in that technology are much, much quicker than the cycles in the data gathering technology. And it's important to stay on top of that. So we are investing heavily there. We want to use those new algorithms to breathe life into our older data, and resell the older data all over again. So you see that as a very high value technology to be involved in.
Okay, thanks. Very helpful.
Next, for Lunda, DNB Nord, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi guys. First, one question on vessels. You think, in 2008, you say that you always need a certain amount of critical, at least some vessels, to do a project. Do you think this is the time to charter in a more long-term contract, as there at least some vessels are almost operating at the break-even?
Right. It's a very interesting question. It's one we think about often. You know, in the last downturn, we were able to get favorable rates on a project-by-project basis without doing long-term commitments. We don't know if we're going to have that luxury this time or not, maybe. And then if we do go that route, then the trick is when do you lock in with some longer-term rates before it heads back up again, because inevitably it will. Those are questions that we're going to be pondering quite a bit. You know, in developing our strategy over the next 6 months. And I think you probably won't see too much in the way of announcements out of us on that until the second half of the year.
Okay, thanks. And then one kind of follow-up. If you do that, or say that the current interest you see from oil companies for new projects, is that mainly for 2D or 3D?
I'd say both, depending on the geographic region.
Okay, thanks.
Next, Christian Diesen, Pareto Securities. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Mark. My question has been answered.
Okay, next, Christopher Møllerløkken, Arctic Securities. Go ahead.
In the assessment you did with Wayfield, you received an opportunity to charter in 3D vessels from Wayfield at what was described as favorable rates. Given the fact that, you know, rates for seismic vessels have declined significantly, are these rates still favorable? Or would you actually get vessels cheaper by buying it at market prices, so to speak?
I would say that today those rates are still good. We will be testing the market over the next 3 to 6 months to find out if we can do better, definitely.
And when you did reiterate the guidance for 2009 today, are you more comfortable today than what you were back in February when you first gave it? Although you had a weak Q1, but you are seeing an uptick in the marketplace during the last recent week.
Yeah. I would say slightly, maybe slightly more. February was a tough time, and especially, you know, the couple of weeks perhaps after we issued our initial guidance, things began to look darker than we thought, and now they're looking brighter than they were then. So I think net maybe a little brighter now than on our February earnings release.
Okay. Thank you.
Next, Mark Ailey, go ahead, please.
Gentlemen, I have a question. In your earnings release, you had a comment on some auction rate securities. Maybe you could give us an update. You're not marking them to market on your balance sheet. Maybe you could just give me an update on that situation. On the next page, there's a potential legal dispute. Again, you say you're not providing for any potential loss because obviously you believe you're in the right. But if the judge does decide against you, how much could it cost?
Okay, on that particular potential legal dispute, there's been no legal action filed.
Okay.
We just received a letter of notification. So for us, this is a zero issue. But we do disclose it for the sake of good order. On the auction rate securities, I think Arna, perhaps, would you like to answer that one on exactly how we are valuing those today? I will start off by saying that that we've redeemed nearly half of what we had a year ago, and it's all been redeemed at par value with no loss of principal. The ones that we still have, we have marked on the balance sheet at a discounted basis, but I should let Arna describe exactly how that's done.
Yes. So when we, in Q3, we did a mark-to-market exercise, and then we did a write-down of, I think, $8.2 million to get them down to what was a fair value compared to the market as such. Then by the end of the year, and also now by the end of Q1, we have used a slightly different methodology where we've discussed with our auditors, since we are not really in the market to sell these off at a discount, we have then got a third party to put a valuation of these securities, taking into consideration actual market trades that have been done, but since the market is still, for these securities, is still in distress, the spreads are enormous, and it's very difficult really to put that in that valuation as such as the only item in doing it. So we have also had this third-party company make a discounted cash flow valuation also on this, and then use the model, and then that's how we come to the value that we have in our balance sheet, which is where we then, as Hank says, after we did the 8.2 or 3 million write down in October, we have then more and more. I think by the end of the year we reversed about 700,000 of that accrual over the equity, and now in Q1 about $330,000, because all the securities that we have redeemed have been at par value.
Question for you. Going forward with your cash management on your balance sheet, are you going to go back to a more conservative approach of just finding a very solid bank? I used to be a bank analyst, and DNB was a really good one in Norway.
Yeah.
You know, and just putting money on deposit in an account, because I know you get a slightly higher interest rate with these auction rate securities, but they're clearly very high risk. So, question for you, are you planning to change your cash management policies going forward to be more conservative and traditional?
Well, absolutely. I mean, when we first recognized or met a failed auction in February 2008, we completely stopped investing into these auction rate securities. We had about, I think, $91 or $94 million invested in those at that time, and so we've been pulling out since then. We have we are now investing our cash only as bank deposits or in money market funds.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, Jane Hingorani, Standard & Poor's. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just getting back to the guidance issue, I just wondered, do you think you'd probably be able to put a tighter ring around that range and so on as we go through the year? I'm just kind of wondering. You know, you said a month later, you even see better sort of signs of activity picking up. Are you just being cautious of kind of keeping it the way it is, or can you just kind of shed some more light on that?
Yeah, we did use a wider range this year than we have, and slightly wider range this year than we have in the past couple of years because of our the uncertainty with the economy and the oil price and so on. Because we felt that, we know that late sales are unpredictable. So I think that it's possible that as we get closer to the end of the year that we could tighten up that range, but certainly not at this early stage.
Okay. And then real quick, I just wondered if you would talk a little bit about the joint sort of PGS survey and just kind of give us an idea of what that is. Are there any details available?
Okay, I'm gonna refer that question to Robert Howell.
Yeah, this is a cooperative survey that we've entered into with PGS. It's a narrow ESMA survey in the DeSoto Canyon region of the Gulf of Mexico. And both companies were acquiring adjacent surveys, and there was quite a bit of overlap on those two surveys originally. Our survey was about 300 OCS blocks in size. We agreed to combine our two surveys into one product, and it's extended the total survey to 365 blocks in size. And the commercial deal is that the companies are sharing costs based upon the amount of data acquired and then the work that is required to process that data, and TGS is processing the data. And then both companies are at the same ratio or same percentage sharing the revenue on late sales from the entire project.
Okay, and no comment on what kind of pre-funding there was on that, or?
It was heavily pre-funded.
And then I just wanted a quick question on something that you talked about last. I think it was on the profit warning call as well, perhaps the last fourth quarter call, just about this notion of acquiring vessels and so on once the wave seal deal was done. I'm trying to kind of get my head around this because, especially in this downturn, we're talking about your business model, being fairly resilient and, in fact, even not that affected by. obviously you benefit from lower charter rates and so on. So why long-term do you see that as a benefit?
Why do we see the
acquiring vessels and so on?
I think at this stage we have not indicated that we're looking at opportunities to acquire vessels.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think I misunderstood.
I think the question related to that was would we be looking to lock in any charters in this environment. And, at some point, the answer is probably yes, when we think the prices are about to turn up again at some point. But in terms of owning and operating vessels, I don't think that's on our list of desired opportunities right now.
So coming off the wave seal whole exercise, that's off the table now.
Yeah, I mean, we would consider it if it were a small piece of something bigger that we wanted to do.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
Next, Ian McPherson, Simmons & Company. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. I guess first I wanted to ask you about how you see the seasonality of late sales this year. I think typically the third quarter and fourth quarter have been your bigger quarters. And do you think that the business, because of the environment we're in, is just lumpier than it used to be, and those seasonal patterns don't apply anymore, or would you sort of stick to that trend as a reasonable forecast for this year?
I think, on the whole, the historic trend that we've seen, where lake sales strengthen throughout the year, is is going to hold. However, I would also mention that I think we may experience a year that's even lumpier than previous years. And the reason I say that is that we know that oil company budgets have been tightened. We know that everybody's trying to squeeze the most value out of their cash. And the way to do that is to, if you need seismic data, is to buy multi-client data rather than to hire vessels, because there are economies of scale there. And the way to get the best pricing on multi-client data is to do it in large volumes by combining, by looking at all your operating groups, looking at what data you might want from a particular vendor and trying to package it into a single transaction. So I think the tendency toward lumpiness is increasing, if anything.
Okay. And then my follow-up question would be just regarding pricing. It's obviously a lot easier to measure pricing on vessels than it is on data library sales. But would you be willing to talk a little bit about elasticity of demand and what actions you've taken with pricing your sales may have had and how it corresponds with your demand outlook for this year?
Right. So the pricing dynamics of multi-client data, as you pointed out, are very different than supply and demand vessel pricing. It's basically a value pricing. You know, we are offering a product that if an oil company wants data over an area, they can get it from us at a much cheaper rate than they can go out and hire a vessel to acquire it for. So there aren't great incentives for us to just lower prices. It doesn't spur additional demand just because we lower prices. So we might tweak prices here and there because a survey is aging or because there might be a new competitive survey. But in terms of just doing across-the-board price reductions, we're not doing that.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
And next, Ole Martin Westgaard, ABG Sundal Collier. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, I guess. Actually, most of them have been asked, but I'll try anyway. In terms of the day rates for the seismic vessels, are you seeing any signs of the day rates bottoming out, or are they still falling?
I don't think we'll know the answer to that question until we start to get into the winter season, because that's typically when prices get their lowest. And I don't think we're there yet. So I think for this summer we know about what the pricing is and it probably hasn't changed much in the last month or so. But the real question is what's going to be the pricing after the summer.
Okay. And how much do you reckon day rates are down now compared to the old rate level?
I'd say 30%, 40%, something like that.
Okay. And just a sort of housekeeping question. On your cost-cutting initiatives, you talked about $10 million. I guess that was for 2009. Will that be $10 million in the P&L, or will there be cash flow impact from that?
Right. That's $10 million on an annualized basis. So it won't be $10 million for just the remainder of 2009. It'll be something less than that. All of that will fall immediately to the P&L. Most of it will, but some of our costs we do capitalize towards the library. And so any reductions there would show up as slightly lower investments rather than slightly lower costs on the P&L immediately. But I would say most of it will show up in the P&L.
And on your backlog of $132 million, is that all for 2009?
No, some of that extends into 2010, particularly in our well log business where we have some longer term subscriptions. But most of it is probably 2009 and at least early 2010.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next, Morten Nystrøm from Lipons. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you. I just have two more questions. First, a simple one. Do you expect the backlog by end second quarter to be above or below the first quarter of 2009 backlog?
Too early to say, Morten. I don't know.
Okay. And another question is, that's related more to the market, but It's a question on the Gulf of Mexico, and it's on the Mexico side. A lot of the seismic acquisition there will probably be more towards contract seismic for PMX. However, there are some signals now that the government will open for other oil companies as well. Do you see the Gulf of Mexico on the Mexico side as an interesting market or an interesting opportunity for TGS, let's say, in 2010 or in 2011?
We believe that that the Mexico side of the Gulf of Mexico will be an interesting market for us. The question is when. Somewhat analogous to Brazil 10 years ago. Brazil was a closed market with only one customer until they changed their constitution and opened up to foreign investment in the oil infrastructure and system. We think that will someday happen in Mexico. We've been thinking that for quite a while, and it's hard to... I wouldn't put 2010 on the calendar and count on it then, but I do think that that will be a highly interesting market for TGS and for multi-client data in general someday.
Thanks.
Next and last on the list, James Redburn, Bank of America. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just one quick follow-up. Given the current situation that the smaller companies are facing, particularly in the North Sea and the Gulf of Mexico, will TGS be open to take stakes and fields in exchange for data? Thank you.
We have been open to risk-sharing contracts in the past where we took partial payment in the form of bonuses related to discoveries or gaining leases or production and so forth. So we are certainly open to those opportunities. I don't think we're interested in operating wells ourselves, but in terms of taking some of our payment at risk related to the success of our customers, we're willing to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, no further questions.
Very well. We appreciate your attention to the call today and look forward to visiting with you again in the future. Thank you.